elections, how to run and participate, visit KPFT's website at kpft.org. This announcement is brought to you by KPFT Houston.
Good morning. It's time for Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. The purpose of Open Journal is to provide media access to the greater Houston community. Sometimes it's talk, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's controversial, but Open Journal is always eclectic and it's always KPFT. At the end of the hour, we'll tell you how you can support this station and host a program. Stay tuned for your calls and more after headlines from London. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT. FT Houston, Radio for Peace.
BBC News with Neil Nunes. A fierce battle has started between Syrian government forces and rebels for control of a key district in Aleppo. A British journalist there says the battle for Salahuddin may decide the fate of Aleppo, which has become the key battleground in the Syrian conflict. Jim Muir reports from Beirut.
Syrian state television ran urgent news flashes saying government forces were completely combing the Salahuddin quarter on the southwest side of the city. It said many rebels have been killed, including a number of non-Syrian fighters, and that booby-trap bombs left behind by the armed rebels had been defused. Local commanders of the rebel Free Syrian Army confirmed that a big attack was taking place, but denied that the opposition forces had been completely dislodged. Salahuddin has been one of the main battlegrounds in the struggle for Syria's biggest city.
Jordan says that Riyad Hijab, the former Syrian prime minister, has only just crossed into Jordan from Syria 2 days after his defection was announced. A Jordanian official told the BBC that Mr. Hijab and his family crossed the border on Tuesday night. The Egyptian army says it has carried out a massive operation backed by the Air Force against militants in the Sinai Peninsula. The military says its campaign has been successful and will continue. Here's Yolande Nihal.
It's relatively calm now in the coastal town of El Arish, but overnight there was loud gunfire as heavily armed men attacked checkpoints nearby. Security forces set off in pursuit. Witnesses saw military planes flying around Sheikh Zayed, which lies closer to Egypt's borders with Israel and the Gaza Strip. The aircraft then struck at targets nearby in the village of Touma, and ground troops entered. Army commanders say 20 militants were killed and 3 armored cars were destroyed.
The latest figures from the United Nations say the number of civilians killed or injured in the Afghan conflict has fallen for the first time in 5 years. The UN mission in Afghanistan said the number fell by 15% in the first half of this year. Here's Jill McGivering.
More than 3,000 Afghan civilians died or were injured in the conflict in the first half of this year. Almost a third of them were women and children. But for the first time in 5 years, the number's fallen. Taliban attacks against NATO-led forces have actually increased in recent months, but both sides, pro and anti-government, are increasingly sensitive about the impact of civilian casualties on public opinion. So like NATO, the Taliban is trying to target its attacks more carefully, although the biggest single threat to civilians is its growing use of roadside bombs.
Jill McGivering. Over 60% of the Philippine capital Manila is underwater after more than a week of heavy rain. The head of the National Disaster Agency described the city as a water world with roads in some areas like rivers. World News from the BBC. The United Nations mission in the Democratic Republic of Congo has said 3 government soldiers have been killed in an attack on an airport in the southeast of the country. A UN mission spokesman said unidentified armed men attacked Luano Airport in the city of Lubumbashi. Cathay Pacific Airways, the world's largest air freight carrier, has posted its worst half-year loss in almost a decade in what analysts said was further evidence of the poor state of the global economy. The operator lost more than $120 million in the first 6 months of the year. The lead singer of Pussy Riot, the Russian punk rock band being prosecuted for hooliganism, has compared the court proceedings to a Stalinist show trial. The group are on trial following their impromptu performance of an anti-Putin song in Moscow's main cathedral in March. Daniel Sanford reports.
This was the final opportunity for the defendants to plead their case in one of the most controversial trials since the communist era. In their very political final speeches, the women likened their fate to that of the famous dissidents of the Soviet Union. One of the women, Nadia Tolokonikova, said, "We may spend a long time in prison, but we are freer than those who prosecute us." After each of the speeches, the public and some of the press applauded loudly, despite the judge warning them that the court was not a theatre.
One of India's biggest sports stars, Mary Kam, has been defeated in the semi-finals of the Olympics flyweight boxing. She was defeated by Britain's Nicola Adams, who has now progressed to the final. Elsewhere, only one of only two Saudi women athletes taking part in the Olympics came last in her qualifying heat for the 800 metres. Earlier, the South African runner Caster Semenya qualified for the 800 metres semi-finals. 16 gold medals are up for grabs today, the 12th day of the Games. BBC World News.
Good morning and welcome to Community Conversation. I'm Mike Honig, sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. I do a little thing called Think Wing Radio, where you're entitled to your own opinion but not your own facts, and I blog at thinkwingradio.com. My guest today is a local Houston labor organizer, and I am calling this show Unionizing for Dummies. For people who feel like, boy, it would be nice to have a union fighting for my rights. I keep hearing about how unions can be really helpful for me because my working conditions are unsafe. I feel like my boss doesn't pay attention. My pay scale is horrible. I can't live on what he's paying me. This is the show for you, and I hope to make it the first in a series. So I hope to take some phone calls in the second half of the show, but I will please ask that you stay on topic with the phone calls. So starting with really, really basic unionizing for dummies, Babur Mohammed, my guest, how do you begin? I mean, do you have to find a union that you approach, or can they seek you out? How does that even start?
Well, it works both ways. A lot of times unions target certain sectors of the workforce that they generally unionize, but it also can be where worker leaders go out to a union and ask a union organizer to guide them through the process. The process itself is not very complicated, although it can get tricky once in order to get buy-in from everyone in the unit.
Okay, and we'll get to that a little bit. From discussions we've had, I think it can also get a little puzzling as to which union you should approach in terms of you want to unionize. Oh, but, you know, we're like the truckers union, we're the electrical people's union. How do you even know which union to approach to start getting help in moving forward?
That's a very common and excellent question because a lot of times the unions themselves are battling over which union gets the turf, as it's called in union organizing. For example, there are the Teamsters, which are transport worker unions, and then there are also service employee unions. And for example, at the airports, it kind of falls under both a transport industry and a service industry if you've got, for example, wheelchair assistants or baggage runners. And so sometimes that can get tricky, but generally unions are all for the same in it for the same fight and for the same reason. So they come to an amicable agreement.
I'm thinking you guys need a union referral clearinghouse. That would be a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
What about retail workers? I mean, retail workers are kind of like service workers, but they're sort of not. Because retail now is a dominant industry in terms of the number of people employed in it. Where would a retail worker go if they want to try to unionize their place of business?
Right. So Unite HERE is one of the unions that represents retail workers, and they've had attempts to unionize companies like Target.
That's Unite HERE?
Right. Unite here, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
So they organize retail workers, and they had an effort to organize Target workers. And then in New York, I believe, was their main, they had a big fight a couple years ago. So they're, again, they're unions that that organize specific sectors, and that would be one example of a retail sector.
Okay, we may talk a little about that later off the air. So if you approach a union about wanting to organize the place of business where you work, what kind of support or guidance or assistance might that parent union have to offer you?
Okay. So resources in terms of, well, the union organizer to guide you through the legal processes. There are about 6 steps that need to be completed before a union contract is won and enforced. And each of the 6 steps has various components, I guess, sub-steps. And so the average lay worker wouldn't be too familiar with the intricacies of each step.
Which is why we're doing the show.
There you go. First thing is majority. Some unions have a hard and fast rule of reaching a majority of the unit of 60% or more of the workers.
So a supermajority.
A supermajority, correct. Some unions just go with whoever within the unit wants to be unionized, especially in a right-to-work state like Texas.
So you can have a partially unionized shop.
Right, and those unions are only as strong as the workers and how they enforce their contract.
And to some extent, I think that requires a measure of moral support from their parent union, the union with which they're affiliated, because I think that every once in a while it's like, and I hate this kind of analogy, but it's kind of like a child who gets discouraged in school, and sometimes they need the parent to give them a little more oomph and a little more encouragement. You know, you're doing okay, you're doing fine, just keep on moving, let me know if you need any help. I mean, do unions provide that for any of their for people that are trying to unionize a shop and are getting discouraged and are feeling lost and maybe feeling a little intimidated?
You know what, Mike? As a union organizer, this is one of the common challenges I and my colleagues come across, and it is to keep the energy positive and to motivate the workers, because bosses don't like for workers to unionize.
Yeah, my mom has told me that. She was a boss.
Okay, so you know firsthand, and I'm sure the listeners know that, especially in the culture that we have here in Texas, the owner or the boss does not want the employee to have their full rights or a fair wage for their hard work, and that is something that is sometimes overwhelming to the workers. But the job of the union is to empower the worker with the knowledge and tools they need to form a union legally through all the channels that the law provides us.
Is it ever possible for a union attempting to organize to actually find a common ground with their employer where there can be benefits to an employer of unionization? Or does it always have to be a zero-sum game?
No, absolutely not. In my experience, in fact, this is the most common case. Studies even show that if a workplace is unionized, the productivity of the worker, the output is generally higher, the conditions in the workplace are better, customer service is better, customers experience a more friendly, more professional environment in unionized shops.
Basically, morale is improved because working conditions are improved, and therefore customer service is better because you can only serve as good as you feel.
Absolutely.
So the notion that unionization must be adversarial with the employer, it doesn't have to be that way.
No, in fact, it's the opposite. In fact, employers, even though they don't want to admit it, benefit from having a union. Maybe not monetarily.
Maybe they can't admit it because they don't understand how they benefit.
Or they don't want to.
So there may be an educational component here for the employers as well as the potentially unionizing employees.
Absolutely, yeah.
So how much selling does it take, and I use the word advisedly, how much selling does it take to get a parent union to give you what support they can, and what kind of support can you get from a parent union, assuming that they see that you're really making an effort?
Mm-hmm. In the cases that I've organized unions, we have a solid leadership committee of workers who have already, in some cases, organized their workers and explained to them what a union is, because these days union membership is very low, and so folks are not informed as well as they ought to be.
Again, the reason for this show.
There you go. Unions educate, empower, and motivate workers to take the right step. And a lot of this is fear. The union will provide resources. They'll provide members from the local union, wherever that shop is being organized, to come in and speak, maybe give a pep talk to workers who might be on the fence or who might have some level of fear. Because fear is an emotion that I'm sure the listeners are well versed with, is it can be used to control people, and employers do that all the time.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break for weather and traffic. This is KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM. I am Mike Honig sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. This is Community Conversation. And now Laura will give us the weather and traffic.
There is slow traffic on the 610 West Loop southbound from Shepherd to I-10 Katy Freeway, and the travel time is about 9 minutes. And if you're on 59 East Tex Freeway southbound from Quitman to 45 is about 10 minutes. And on the 610 South Loop westbound from Stella Link to Evergreen is about 10 minutes. Current temperature is 84. Skies are partly cloudy. Humidity is 74%. And we can expect some isolated thunderstorms today. The chance of precipitation is about 20%. Otherwise, today will be mostly sunny with a high of 96 and a low of 77. Heat index values may possibly reach as high as 106 today. And the air quality forecast, however, shows that ozone may reach moderate or possibly higher levels on the north and northeast side of the Houston area. And there actually is an air quality alert. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has issued an ozone watch for the Houston, Galveston, and Brazoria area for today, August 8th. Atmospheric conditions are expected to be favorable for producing high levels of ozone pollution in the Houston, Galveston, and Brazoria areas. Please stay tuned after the community conversation. Today's community spotlight is Achieving Excellent Health, and it's hosted by Shoshana Castle. And now back to Community Conversation with Mike Honig today.
Hi, welcome back to Community Conversation. I'm Mike Honig, sitting in for Dwayne Bradley. And we are talking about unionizing for dummies. I will open the phone lines. The phone is 713-526-5738. I will request that you call in some way relating to the topic of unionizing, questions you might have, issues you might have encountered, and Bobber will help to answer those as best he can. So when you get to a point where you've decided, I may want to unionize my shop, what is the first step in terms of paperwork, affiliation, etc.? Just what is the ABC of proceeding?
So the first and foremost step is to build a majority, have a majority of the workers on board with the idea of unionizing. The second step is to get people signed up on cards. These are cards that are union authorization cards that authorize a particular union to negotiate contracts and benefits on behalf of the workforce.
Where were those cards obtained?
The National Labor Relations Board can give you those cards, or you can have cards that they're just basic cards: phone number, name, address, where you work, that, and your signature. That says basically that you're authorizing the union.
Over the next few days, if you would get me some of that information that I can post on the website, we probably won't have it for at least a day or two, but if you and I can work together on assembling that, that would be great.
I'd be happy to.
So first find out if there is a majority in the workplace, or a supermajority as the case may be, 60% of the workers,
right,
for the establishment of a union. Get the NLRB cards to fill out, and then what's the next step?
The cards, the point of the cards is also to show the employer that you have a majority of workers on board. And so that, at that point, you would want the employer to recognize the union and become neutral in their dealings with, not intimidate the workers and not persuade them or dissuade them either way. So recognition is next. Once you've been recognized by the company, by the employer, you then can elect a bargaining committee, and that consists of folks from the workplace who volunteer or are chosen by their coworkers to negotiate on behalf of the remaining unit, along with union representatives. And once the bargaining committee is elected, bargaining happens. You go back and forth about wages, benefits, language in the contract, and then you have an election. And the election can be a secret ballot election, or it can be an open election
that's what you were calling in my notes ratification,
right, to ratify the contract.
Phone number here is 713-526-5738 if you have a question or a comment on unionizing, challenges you've had unionizing, questions you have about how to unionize. Also, if you have any questions, you can email them to me at thinkwingradio@msn.com. That's thinkwingradio@msn.com, and I will forward the questions to Bob or in one way or another get responses back to you as best I can. So, challenges. We've talked about setting up a union, trying to get a union established at your place of business. That's work. It takes time. It takes energy. It can be stressful, like any work effort is. Sometimes you feel discouraged. You need encouragement. Let's talk a little about that process, as well as the right to work issues that people face, particularly in states like Texas.
Right. So, it is like any work. It's not easy, and hard work ought to be rewarded. And the rewards of unionizing far exceed the trials and tribulations that workers have to go through.
You got to see the pot of gold at the end of the
right. Day. Absolutely. So, one of the things that union organizers, a tactic that is always used and that leader workers use, is to identify the issues that move the worker. That is the key. It's like the golden key to forming a union.
In sales, you call that the hot button or the red sweater.
Okay. Learn something new every
day. There you go.
So whenever you've got a workplace and people are making even a decent amount of...
You know what? Let's attach this to the janitors. Strike that's currently going on. Now, what is the current standard pay for a janitor in Houston?
Starting at $8.35. This is at the end of their contract.
Now, minimum wage is
$7.25.
Okay, and they are requesting
$10 an hour.
So, really, the objective here is if somebody has a full-time job, it should pay enough for them to live on.
Absolutely.
Maybe not extravagantly, but it should pay enough that they don't have to live under a bridge, they don't have to get food stamps. That's essentially the goal here.
Right.
So the janitors union, we have a couple of minutes here. And actually, I have Ron on the phone, so I'm going to get to Ron in just one moment. If you could try to give me a quick response as best you can to that. How has the process worked out for the janitors?
So they've been on strike for about 5 weeks now. And the employers were not budging. They were offering 10 cents an hour. And that was not acceptable by the workforce.
And still 10 cents an hour more than they would have been offered if they hadn't unionized.
Well, true.
But still not much.
No, absolutely. And so they're at a point right now, they're at a very strong point right now. They're going back to the table. Actually, they're at the table for about 22 minutes now already. So we hope to have some good news today.
All right. I am going to go to Ron in Houston. Ron, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind on this topic?
Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I am a union member, and I thought your listeners would be interested in knowing that we as union members also have rules we have to abide by. For instance, I sign a non-compete clause in a contract and am not allowed to work on my own. And if I get caught, it is my union's responsibility to prosecute me. So,
in other words, you're talking about a non-compete that protects your employer.
Yes.
That the union enforces for your employer.
Exactly. And I'm sure a lot of employers don't realize that they have this protection.
So this is a benefit of unionization for employers, which is something that maybe we need to make employers more aware of.
Exactly.
Ron, I thank you so much for your call. I hope to do some more of these shows again. I don't have anything firmly scheduled, but if you follow my blog, I will be doing show announcements, and perhaps KPFT will be nice enough to put me on the air again sometime soon. You have been listening to Community Conversation, KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. Tomorrow we start our fall fund drive, and you'll probably be hearing me now and then for that. Summer! Well, soon it'll be fall, but it's the summer fund drive. And I've had a great time. I've appreciated all you folks calling me, and I look forward to talking to you and hearing from you again. You all take care. Remember, slower traffic, stay right. It's not just a good idea. It's in the law. It's in the handbook.
The Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 8th of August, 2012. It's the anniversary of the great train robbery, 1963. A Royal Mail train bound from Glasgow to London stopped before dawn by an unexpected red signal on the line. And when the conductor stopped the train to investigate, 15 men in ski masks armed with iron bars boarded the train and collected 124 sacks of banknotes worth well over £2 million. They went to a farmhouse about 30 miles away where they divided the money, but police were able to recover the fingerprints of all of them. 12 of the 15 captured and tried within 6 months, but shortly after the trial, two of them, Ronnie Biggs and Charlie Wilson, escaped prison, fled to Paris, had plastic surgery to change their appearance. The other three, including the mastermind Bruce Reynolds, also evaded the police for several years, but eventually all of the robbers were captured. It was on this date in 2000 the Confederate submarine H.L. Hunley was raised from the bottom of Charleston Harbor, where it had lain since February 1864. The Hunley was about 40 feet long. It was 4 feet in diameter, made of cast iron, propelled through the water by the means of a hand-cranked propeller. It carried a crew of 8, 7 to turn the propeller, 1 to steer. The Hunley was out to sink a Union warship, the Housatonic, which was guarding the entrance to Charleston Harbor, and it was successful. It launched a torpedo, and the Housatonic sank. But something happened to the Hunley, and it sank too. The wreck was found in 1995, about 100 yards from the wreck of the Housatonic, and on this date, it was brought up. And it was on this date in 1929... the dirigible, the Graf Zeppelin, took off from Lakehurst, New Jersey, on a round-the-world flight. The flight took just over 21 days. There were 61 passengers and crew on board, 60 men, and one woman, Lady Grace Drummond Hay, a journalist who became the first woman to fly around the world. Before the Graf Zeppelin flew around the world, it had become the first commercial passenger ship to fly across the Atlantic Ocean. It flew a scientific mission over the North Pole, flew passengers back and forth across the Atlantic, but when its sister ship, the Hindenburg, went up in flames in 1937, the age of the giant dirigibles came to an end. Here's a poem for today by Maxine Kuhlman, entitled In the Moment. Some days the pond wears a glaze of yellow pollen. Some days it is clean swept. The trout leap up, feasting on insects. A modest size, it sits like a soup tureen in a surround of white pine, where Rosie, 14 pounds, some sort of rescued terrier, part bat, the ears, part anteater, the nose, shyly paddles in the shallows for salamanders, frogs, and little painted turtles. She logged 10 years down south in a kennel, secured in a crate at night. Her heart murmur will carry her off, no one can say when. Meanwhile, she is wrapped in the moment. Our hearts leap up, observing. Dogs live in the moment, pursuing that brilliant dragonfly called pleasure. Only we, sunstruck in this azure day, must drag along the backpacks of our past, must peer into the bottom muck of what's to come, scanning the plot for words that say, another year or not. A poem by Maxine Cumin, In the Moment, from her collection Where I Live, published by W.W. Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.